In 1852, Harriet Beecher Stowe's seminal work, Uncle Tom's Cabin, drove a nail into the institution of slavery that at first significantly crippled and ultimately helped end it worldwide as any form of respectable human endeavor. 54 years later, Upton Sinclair's novel, The Jungle, brought to light the grisly secrets of U.S. meat production in much the same way. Again, as a result of one book, the United States standards in production, processing, and distribution of food were destined to become the gold standard for humans worldwide.
In the year 1905, there was a strike of the workers in the Chicago stockyards. And I walked through the yards and I saw filth beyond belief. And I studied the laws, and among the interesting things I discovered was that all the meat that the United States government inspectors condemned were dropped through chutes down to a lower floor and was there processed and sold to the people of Chicago. And I went home and wrote The Jungle, as I said at the time, or just afterwards, blinded by my own tears. The most terrible things I had seen. I finish up by telling you that there are a lot of things in America that need to be changed. Don't let anybody fool you about that. And don't expect to read accounts of them and explanations of them in your press, which is owned by big business and is a part of big business, and tells you nothing that isn't, or very little that isn't good for big business.
A further leap of 60 years, and another author, a woman again, awakens the nation and the world in a single volume. As ahead of her time as science fiction, marine biologist Rachel Carson's Silent Spring predicted the death of the natural world and laid the blame at the hallowed doorstep of the modern age's burgeoning giants of the chemical industry. So powerful was her evocation of the hazards of the industry's miracle pesticide DDT, so eloquent her questioning of humanity's wisdom and its blind faith in technology, that a massive environmental movement arose like a tidal wave to sweep the surface of the earth. Hi, I'm Haunani Singer, one of the producers of Pacifica Radio Archives From the Vault series. This week, we present a special program on this courageous woman. This week, From the Vault, Rachel Carson, Silent Spring.
My text this afternoon is taken from the Globe Times of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, a news item in the issue of October 12th. After describing in detail the reactions to Silent Spring of the farm bureaus in two Pennsylvania counties, the reporter continued, "No one in either county farm office who was talked to today had read the book, but all disapproved of it heartily." I think this sums up very neatly the background of some of the noisier comment that has been heard in this unquiet autumn following the publication of Silent Spring. And in the words of an editorial in the Bennington Banner, "The anguished reaction to Silent Spring has been to refute statements that were never made." Early in the summer, as soon as the first installment of the book appeared in the New Yorker, public reaction to Silent Spring was reflected first in a tidal wave of letters. Letters to congressmen, letters to government agencies, to newspapers, and to the author. These letters continue to come, and I am sure that they represent the most important and lasting reaction to the book. Then, even before the book itself was published, editorials and columns by the scores and even hundreds had discussed it all over the country, reflecting, I am sure, the true importance of the subject. The early reaction in the chemical press was rather moderate, And in fact, I have had and still have fine support from some segments of the chemical press and some segments of the agricultural press. But in general, as was to be expected, the industry press was not happy. And by late summer, the printing presses of the pesticide industry and their trade associations had begun to pour out the first of a growing stream of pamphlets and booklets designed to protect and repair the somewhat battered image of pesticides.
Chemical and Engineering News, August 13, 1962. Industry maps defense to pesticide criticisms. Moving gingerly, the pesticides industry is getting lined up to defend itself against the criticisms of Rachel Carson. Miss Carson's series of three articles, published in June in the New Yorker, are just a hint, the industry fears, of what is to come. Most industry men to whom Chemical and Engineering News has talked feel Miss Carson presents facts accurately for the most part, but comes to unwarranted conclusions from them and ignores the benefits of pesticides. Waiting for the other shoe to drop, the industry is now preparing for Miss Carson's book, Silent Spring, which will be published September 27th. Meanwhile, the government is also concerned. In response, at least in part, to Miss Carson's articles, the Federal Council for Science and Technology has set up an ad hoc committee to review present government activities with respect to pesticides and other chemicals in the environment. The group will take advantage of work already done by federal agencies, catalog existing research problems in the field, and pinpoint such gaps as may exist. Bosphalette Jones, Special Assistant for Health and Medical Affairs to the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, will head the committee. Mr. Jones told Chemical and Engineering News last week that the membership of the committee has not been settled yet, but it will almost certainly include representatives from the departments of Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Interior, and Health, Education, and Welfare. He says all its members will be government personnel. Its report will be entirely for the use of the council. He hopes the committee can work fairly rapidly. Mr. Jones says the Carson articles present nothing new, that they are highly dramatized presentations, but that they have aroused a great deal of public interest.
And plans have been announced for quarterly mailings to opinion leaders and for monthly statements to press and radio. Speakers are going out all over the country. So it is clear that we are to receive heavy doses of tranquilizing information designed to lull the public to sleep from which it had been so rudely awakened. Now, some definite gains have been made toward a saner policy of pest control in recent months. And I think the important issue now is whether we are to hold and to extend those gains. The attack on Silent Spring is now falling into a rather definite pattern, and all the well-known devices are being used. Of course, one obvious way to weaken a cause is to discredit the person who champions it. And so the masters of invective have been busy. I am a bird lover, a cat lover, a fish lover. I am a priestess of nature, and I am a devotee of some mystical cult that has to do with laws of the universe, which my critics somehow consider themselves immune to.
In the New Yorker series, Miss Carson says that use of pesticides has killed or injured people, livestock, and wildlife, as well as the pests. She says that it is upsetting the balance of nature and may be wrecking our genetic heritage. She cites case after case of fish and bird kills following insecticide applications, and cases of human deaths following use of pesticides. Her most scathing words are used against area-wide aerial spraying, which she terms chemical rain, chemical downpour, or even chemical fallout. These campaigns have at times been not only harmful to wildlife, she says, but also ineffective against the pests they were meant to control. Pleading for a large-scale conversion to biological and other methods that would leave no residues on foods, she says, as things stand now, we are little better off than guests of the Borgias. However, she claims that she is not against every use of pesticides.
Another well-known and much-used device is to misrepresent my position and then to attack the things that I've never said. Now, I don't want to belabor the obvious, because anyone who has really read the book knows that I do favor insect control in appropriate situations, that I do not advocate the complete abandonment of chemical control, that I criticize modern chemical control not because it controls harmful insects, but because it controls them badly and inefficiently, and because it creates many dangerous side effects in doing so. I criticize the present methods because they are based on a rather low level of scientific thinking. We really are capable of much greater sophistication in our solution of this problem.
The National Agricultural Chemicals Association now has a position paper on the New Yorker articles and is making it available to anyone who asks for it. The Manufacturing Chemists Association also has a policy statement. MCA's statement talks generally about chemicals and the environment, does not mention Miss Carson or her book specifically, although it does respond to some of her contentions. However, MCA President John Hull says in a letter to member firms accompanying the statement that Miss Carson's articles, like many others before them, are a warning that thinking people are concerned about the misuse of chemicals and that for the most part they lack the information on which to base intelligent judgment. He believes the industry must bring the information to them as accurately, thoroughly, quickly, and objectively as possible. His group and the NACA are now mapping plans to do so. In general, the NACA statement makes these comments on the articles. They present one side of a very important subject. They present neither an accurate nor a complete idea of the importance of pesticide chemicals to the production of food and fiber or to the protection of public health. They allow readers to draw conclusions which are unwarranted in the light of scientific facts. NACA's statement argues that two federal laws, the Miller Pesticides Amendment and the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, provide adequate safeguards to the public health. It also recalls numerous investigations of the industry and the effect of its product by committees of Congress, the National Academy of Sciences, the U.S. Public Health Service, and governors' committees in many states. All of these, it says, concluded that pesticides must be used to produce food and fiber, that they must be and are being safely tested before use, and that they must be carefully and wisely applied. Most producers of pesticides aren't commenting for publication about the Carson articles, preferring instead to let their trade associations carry the ball. The list of companies that refused Chemical and Engineering News's invitation to comment reads like a who's who for the pesticides industry. 10 or 12 companies are preparing point-by-point rebuttals to the New Yorker series for their own use. These will take time, mean many man-hours of literature searching and writing. Meanwhile, little has been heard in defense of pesticides from the government agencies which regulate the industry. The Department of Agriculture, severely criticized in the articles, has made no official statement. Nor has the Food and Drug Administration. Unofficially, an FDA spokesman says the articles are obviously, perhaps also intentionally, one-sided. He says the cases Miss Carson cites are almost all cases of misuse, but he believes the articles could have a good effect by warning of the dangers of misuse.
But Rachel Carson had her supporters as well as her critics.
In case after case, Miss Carson succeeds in documenting her thesis with complete adequacy. It is not pleasant to learn of the casual spraying of the landscape with chemicals capable of mutagenic effects and regarded by some authorities as representing as great a menace as high levels of radiation. Nor is it reassuring to read that the hydrocarbons have an affinity for mammalian germ cells. At present, there is no law on the statute books that requires manufacturers to demonstrate the genetic effects, as distinguished from the toxicity, of their concoctions. Nor is there any way of controlling what the average uninformed farmer may do with his insecticides. An equally ill-educated and impatient public wants its weeds, gnats, and mosquitoes eliminated in one fell blow. It is not sophisticated enough to trouble over the looming demise of our beautiful national bird, the bald eagle, nor to connect the return of many supposedly eliminated pests with the fact that the newer generation may be able to flourish in a sack of DDT and thus be twice as formidable. The biological controls which Miss Carson favors, along with other informed biologists, are not just more careful and discreet use of pesticides, but also such clever natural manipulations as the release of sterilized screwworm flies, causing a greater reduction in the population of this parasite than any insecticide would have achieved. Successful experiments such as this depend upon precise knowledge of the life history of an organism. They strike directly at the heart of the problem. They do not leave poisonous residues or resistant life strains, nor do they result in the mass killing that frequently destroys valuable food chains on which even man is in the long run dependent. All of these facts Rachel Carson has set forth sensibly in the quiet, rational prose for which she is famous. If her present book does not possess the beauty of The Sea Around Us, it is because she has courageously chosen, at the height of her powers, to educate us upon a sad and unpleasant and unbeautiful topic, and one of our own making. Silent Spring should be read by every American who does not want it to be the epitaph of a world not very far beyond us in time.
The criticisms of Silent Spring and its author continued.
Another piece in the pattern of attack largely ignores Silent Spring and concentrates on what I suppose would be called the soft sell, the soothing reassurances to the public. Some of these acknowledge that my facts are correct, but they say that the incidents I reported all occurred in the past, that these things are well known now, and that measures have been taken to prevent their recurrence. Now, it must be assumed that the people reading these reassurances do not read other things in the newspaper, because actually pesticides have figured rather prominently in the news in recent months. Some of the incidents trivial, some almost humorous, and some quite important. In general, they do not differ greatly from the type of incidents that have occurred over past years in which I reported. Now, what are some of the ways that pesticides are making news now? Well, let me give you just a few examples. The New York Post of October 12th reported the seizure by the Food and Drug Administration of more than 250,000 pounds of potatoes in the Pacific Northwest. The agents of the Food and Drug Administration had found that they contained about 4 times the permitted residues of dieldrin and aldrin. A few weeks ago, the Fish and Wildlife Service reported on studies of the eagle in relation to insecticides. I think almost everyone knows that the bald eagle, our national emblem, is seriously declining in numbers. The service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, has now measured the lethal dose of DDT in the eagle. It has done this by controlled feeding experiments. What is particularly important is that it has now found that dead eagles found in the wild are carrying the lethal dose or more than the lethal dose of DDT. Other studies on the occurrence of DDT in the eggs and partially developed embryos of eggs that have failed to reach mature development also suggest a factor there in the failure of eagle reproduction. This fall also, Canadian papers carried a warning that woodcock being shot by hunters in New Brunswick were carrying residues of heptachlor and might be dangerous if used as food. Now, woodcock are migratory birds. Those that nest in New Brunswick migrate to the southern United States, where heptachlor has been used extensively in the fire ant program. The residues in the birds were 3 to 3.5 parts per million. The legal tolerance for heptachlor is 0. Now, very recently, biologists in the Massachusetts Fish and Game Department have reported that fish in the Framingham Reservoir, just outside Boston, are carrying residues of DDT as high as 75 parts per million, This is 10 times the legal tolerance. This is, of course, a public water supply for a large number of people. This summer, the newspapers widely reported the story of some 5,000 Turkish children suffering from an affliction called porphyria, characterized by severe liver damage and by the growth of hair on the face, hands, and arms, giving a monkey-like appearance to the victims. This was traced to the consumption of seed, which had been treated with a chemical fungicide. Now, of course, the wheat had been intended for planting. It was not meant to be used as food directly, but the people were hungry and perhaps they did not understand the restriction. Now, this was an accidental occurrence, but it did take place over a long period of time. It occurred in a far part of the world, but it is well to remember that large quantities of seed are similarly treated here. One other item, an Associated Press dispatch of November 16th, a sad little commentary on technology gone wrong. A federal court jury awarded a New York State farmer damages for his potato crop. The damage was done by a chemical that was supposed to stop sprouting. Instead, the sprouts grew inward. We're told also that chemicals are never used unless tests have shown them to be safe. Now, this, of course, is not an accurate statement. I am happy to see that the Department of Agriculture plans to ask the Congress to amend the Federal Insecticide, Rodenticide, and Fungicide Act to do away with the provision that now permits a company to register a chemical under protest, even though a question of health or safety has been raised by the department. And we have other reminders that unsafe chemicals get into use. County agents, for example, frequently have to amend or rescind earlier advices on the use of pesticides. For example, I saw a letter the other day, recently sent out to farmers, recalling stocks of a chemical that had been used as a cattle spray. Just in September, there were unexplained losses among cattle following its use. Several suspected lots were recalled, but the losses continued. And now all outstanding lots of the chemical have had to be recalled. The inaccurate statements in reviews of Silent Spring are a dime a dozen, and I shall only mention one or two examples. Time, in its discussion of Silent Spring, described accidental poisonings from pesticides as very rare. Well, let's look at a few figures. California, the one state that keeps complete and accurate records, reports from 900 to 1,000 cases of poisoning from agricultural chemicals per year. About 200 of those are from the chemical parathion alone.
In January of 1963, thousands of influential citizens received a letter from C.G. King, president of the Nutrition Foundation, Incorporated.
I am writing you because many responsible citizens, including both scientists and non-scientists, are increasingly concerned about the promotion of Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, as if it were a reliable and scientific document. As president of the Nutrition Foundation, and as immediate past president of the American Public Health Association, I believe that it is important to keep the record straight, to recognize factual evidence with reasonable interpretation, and to be equally critical of distortion and bias, irrespective of the skill and popularity of a writer. You will find four reprints of articles enclosed with this letter. They are reviews of Silent Spring and comments on its areas of concern, prepared by independent, distinguished scientists who have many years of active responsibility in the field covered by this book. I hope that you will take time to read these comments, for they reflect the opinion of a large, responsible, independent, and highly qualified segment of the scientific community. The problem is magnified in that publicists and the author's adherents among the food faddists, health quacks, and special interest groups are promoting her book as if it was scientifically irreproachable and written by a scientist. Neither is true. The book presents almost solely selected information that is negative and uses such bits from a period of many years to build up a vastly distorted picture. It is to be regretted that the sales of Silent Spring are benefiting the many special interest groups who are now feeding on its publicity. These groups, who are profiting from the atmosphere it attempts to create, are those who advertise and promote to gull and frighten Americans about our food and our health. Their advertisements are designed to convince us that our forests, farms, and food are poisoned, our health has failed, but that a long and happy life awaits if only we will buy or follow Panacea X.
Cesar Chavez, co-founder of the United Farm Workers, in a talk he gave in 1968.
See, we have now in California and in all areas of the country, we've made great advances in pesticides and insecticides. And the university in California and universities all over the country, I'm sure, especially in farm states, know how many bugs each pesticide and insecticide is going to kill. They know exactly how many it's going to kill and how long they will remain dead. What they don't know, and they don't care to know, is what effect it has on the human being. They don't care. So it's very, very, very serious. Let me tell you, 3 weeks ago, a small clinic that we have in Delano, its house in a house trailer, a lady came in. She had been handling this very highly poisonous chemical. She came in, she was beginning to lose her fingernails. Eventually, she lost all of her fingernails. See, what happens is that you don't get you don't know what's happening, because if you handle any of these highly toxic chemicals, you don't feel the effects. You don't know the effects immediately. It's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4, 6 weeks later, you begin to have some effects. Not right away. For instance, we have many cases where a farm worker, will be spraying these very dangerous chemicals, and then he's all over this. He's sprayed for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a week, and it's all over. 6 weeks later, he begins to have problems with his vision. Comes to a doctor, and he can't see well, or there's something wrong. Cases where people will use the insecticides, and then 2 months, 3 months later, they began to get skin poisoning. See, it takes such a long time to begin to work. It's a very slow thing. That we're always having great arguments on the industrial accident cases. They don't want to take into consideration. Now, those sprays, dangerous chemicals, usually have an oily base, so they'll stay on the vineyard or whatever it is, and the tree stay there. I can't prove this, but it seems to be a good idea that there is more than one reason why you should help us in the boycott. If you were to say, well, they're in California, I'm in New York, and well, we have so many other human needs. They can take care of themselves, and as far as a boycott, I like grapes anyway, and if I buy a small bunch, it's not going to really hurt anything. If you were to say that, let me give you a good reason why you shouldn't eat grapes. How do you know? How do you know? Or how do I know if some of those residues of those sprays are not on those grapes? So if you don't want to do it because of convictions, do it because of your health.
You're listening to Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, on From the Vault, an original Pacifica Radio Archives weekly program.
Welcome, sulfur dioxide. Hello, carbon monoxide. Everywhere. Breathe Dioxide, hello, carbon monoxide.